And a good Sunday morning to all of you out there. It is another edition of the Morning After podcast where we try to make sense of everything that happened the night before. Hans Olsen, Scott Gerard, Lloyd Cole. Happy Sunday morning, everybody. Hans, Lloyd, how you doing?
Well, doing really good. And for anybody out there that's thinking, boy, these guys shouldn't be working on the Sabbath, we don't work. This is not work. This is just a couple of guys, whether it's during sacrament meeting or it's right now, talking sports. That's all we're doing.
Little known fact, Hans is actually outside the chapel right now on a cell phone.
Oh, man, that is so true. That is more true than I think anybody knows.
I don't know if I've ever told you this story or not, but there was I was in the middle of church once, and I was on Twitter in the middle of church, and it was, you know, the old sacrament meeting, and there was a tweet about a certain college coach who had accepted another job at a university, and it was one of the coordinators here for one of the schools, and they accepted a coordinator job at another university. And so I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And I just hit retweet on it. Didn't put a comment on there. 5 minutes later, I get a phone call in the middle of church from that coordinator's head coach. And he is just lighting me up and just, have I told you this story, Hans?
Yeah.
And I'm not, yeah. I won't say who it was. It rhymes with Schmary Schmanderson. And, and he is tearing into me like, are you reporting this? I'm like, no, I just hit retweet. Oh, okay, one of my guys said that you're reporting that this coach is leaving and he's not. I'm like, coach, I'm not. I just hit retweet. And maybe it was a little early on in Twitter and people didn't know quite how it worked, but ooh, he was getting after me. I'm like, hey, I just hit a retweet. But anyway, that's beside the point. So
in the middle of church.
I'm sitting in the foyer.
Such a sinner.
I'm sitting in the middle of the foyer getting barked at by a head football coach here in the state of Utah. And by the way, this is Gary's first tenure at Utah State. So this was a long time ago. This was like 2009, 2010, around there. And it's like, wow, Gary, no, calm down. It's all good. All right.
Anyway. I love that guy, man. So full of passion, that guy.
All right, so let's get to it. Where should we start, Hans? You tell me where you want to go. Utah, BYU, Utah State.
Lloyd, why don't you start with the second half of the University of Utah game? Go.
Ready, break.
Well, let's see. It didn't start off much better than the first. It took a little while. I don't think I've ever seen, I know we were tweeting or texting back and forth a little bit, and I don't think I've seen, I'm sitting there watching this game. I'm like, wow, Kyle Whittingham is going to explode here in a sec. Like on the sideline, just straight up. I'm talking Big Trouble in Little China. Like the one guy that just explodes.
Oh, yeah.
Like
good
that.
Call. Yeah.
And I'm just, because not a single guy can hold on to the football. Nobody. And somehow they, you know, because of their defense just, it kept them in the game, as it always has, typically, and they were able to pull it out somehow. But I'm telling you what, Kyle Whittingham, and I tweeted out something along the lines of, like, I am so eager to get to the post game because Kyle Whittingham is going to lose his mind. And I was so disappointed because Austin said he actually was quite calm, which I can't even believe that.
Well, yeah, I can't believe it either because it was mounting. And that missed field goal where Redding was running off the field, in my mind, I kept thinking to myself, hey, Redding, just keep bending through the middle of the field until you get to the opposite end of where Kyle Whittingham is and then head towards the sideline. But do not make eye contact. And I watched Kyle Whittingham. I'm not much of a lip reader, but you don't have to be a genius lip reader to see what he said. And it's like, oh, man, I'm so glad I didn't just miss a field goal. And you know, watching Redding run off the sideline and that missed field goal, just being a part of everything that was falling apart was pretty miserable to watch. So there obviously was there were quite a few issues here. There were six total fumbles, but there was another fumble that wasn't counted. There were three lost, but there were actually seven fumbles, and I think it was from six different players. And
I think there might have been. I think there was eight, Hans.
Okay, so
I'm only counting six, but I think there was eight.
Jaquinda Jackson, I know, had two, but he's only listed as having one here.
Right.
But Bernard put it on the ground three times. They don't have Tavian Thomas's fumble here, so I think it is eight, Lloyd.
Well, and I believe Fotheringham had one. It was overturned. Like the
catch, it might be nine.
It should have been called a fumble probably, but you know.
Well, I believe the first Jackson one was he fumbled it, but they said it was a touchdown before the fumble, so that one I don't think is going to count. Yep. But it was, you know, had that hit happened just about a yard before, that would have been another fumble. You had the Covey fumble that went out of bounds. You talk in basketball where all of a sudden guys can't make free throws and they say, well, it's contagious. Well, I guess maybe fumbling's contagious for the University of Utah, because that was just horrific.
Well, you know, it's a fumble party when Britton Covey gets in on it.
Yeah.
He's like, I can't let all you guys have the fun. And there's Britton on a punt return, putting the ball on the ground. When's the last time you saw him fumble a ball? So it was really bad. I mean, really bad. And the second half was absolutely putrid. I have seen Utah's offense move less before in a half. Like, they've moved actually less. But I have never in 16 years of covering Kyle Whittingham as a head coach, I have never seen a half so full of ridiculous turnovers, three turnovers. You had the fumble by Mekhi Bernard in the first offensive drive. You had the fumble by Jaquinda Jackson on the 7 or 8 yard line. And then you had the fumble by Curry on the half yard line. And it was like everything was just timed up perfectly to not go in and score. But realistically, in the second half of this game, there should have been 17 more points put on the board. It should have been 41-13, but instead you missed the field goal. You fumble one ball at the 7 yard line, one at the half yard line, and you look like a complete joke because you're making so many dumb mistakes offensively. And it is really frustrating. And since we're on the Utah game, I might as well mention that you had to make some offensive line moves.
Yeah,
and you're trying to find a tackle that can hold up. And I was watching Braden Daniels move to the tackle spot. He overstepped on one run play, and his defensive end sunk underneath and got a TFL. It's one of those plays where Utah fans are like, how are they hitting our running back in the backfield? And it's because you've got a tackle who's trying to overstep and get the hook. And the defensive end ripped underneath him and hit the guy in the backfield. So then you see back-to-back possessions where it looks like Cam Rising is being chopped in half by some type of magician, one of those cutting magicians. And both times it was Bam Olesini, one time getting beat with a speed rush on the outside. Then he tries to step outside to not be beat on the very next play. But to not be beat by the speed rush, and this guy dips in on a club rip, and both times just kills Cam Rising. And it was a quick reminder that they have not figured out their offensive line issues. They do have a bye week, and they've got more time to try to get this figured out, but it still was not a good performance by the offensive line.
The only positive that actually came from that game was another running back stepping up and having a 100-yard game. This is now their third running back that's had a 100-yard game. So now I ask you, Hans and Scotty, have they found their running back? I think we ask this every week. Have they found their running back?
So first they found it, and it was Thomas. And then he gets in the doghouse. Then they found him, and it's Bernard. And then he struggles. And then now they found him, and it's TJ Pledger. 10 carries, 117 yards, and a score. 11.7 yard average. It would be nice if they could just settle in on one guy, but that's what Kyle wants. It just seems like nobody really wants to take it over. Maybe Pledger will do that, but I don't know. I mean, Chris Curry went out there. He put the ball on the turf. I'm kind of curious to see what they do with Jackson, if they continue to work him more into, you know, goal line situations, third down. I guess you can't call it a wildcat. He is a quarterback, but, you know, with his ability to run the football, what kind of role does he have on this team going forward? So we saw some different wrinkles, but to your point, Hans, I think that, you know, we talk about, and I heard you and Frank on the postgame show, and I thought both of you guys had some really good points. You could look at the fumbles and say, well, if those aren't fumbles, this isn't a 24-13 game. This is a 41-13 game. But then also, maybe we look at those fumbles and maybe that masks some bigger issues that are still prevalent with this team, like the offensive line. Lloyd, to your point, like some, you know, who's going to take over that running back position? There's still some really key issues with this team that need to be resolved.
Yeah, and let me ask you. In a game like this, you have a game we just got done talking about how dreadful. I mean, I can't even imagine game film on this game is going to be fun to watch. How do you watch game film? What do you learn from this? I mean, how can you learn anything? You had what we think is probably 9 fumbles, essentially. Like, do you just throw this film out the window and be like, you know what? Well, we got to, you know, work on some things, you know, ball security. Like, how do you improve on this game?
Well, I hate comparing football to war, but just for terminology sense and usage, and this is no comparison. It's just, a game is a war, and inside that war are just a bunch of individual battles. And so what you do in game film, Lloyd, is instead of worrying about the big picture, I just worry about my battle. And so I go back and I look at probably, you know, 65 snaps. I look at 58 snaps. And in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, I just got to focus on me. Like, if I'm Bam Olsini, I go back and I'm just focusing on me. And I see, okay, I overstepped there, and my kick step was not deep enough there, and I gave up these 2 pressures. But if you go look at this, I did really good on these 5 combo blocks, and I did a great job on this hook block. And so it comes down to, Lloyd, each of the starting 22 offensive and defensively, just looking at their battle and really carving it down to a smaller picture so that they can have a better effort in their small battle in the next big war. And that's how these guys got to do it. They just got to whittle it down and make sure that they're focusing on some of the little mistakes they made. Like you guys were talking about, Cole Fotheringham. He had a couple of really nice catches that led to a field goal that got Utah back in a pretty decent position. But he also fumbled right as his knee was touching, and it's just too close. So go back and look at that, man, and strengthen, clamp down on that football. Everybody out there has something that they can improve on, specifically offensively, because there's no way that Washington State should have been this close. Guys, this was their backup quarterback, and they lost Max Borgi in the first half of this game. He didn't even play in the second half.
Yeah, it's a problem. And Kyle Whittingham said after the game that they couldn't have scripted it any better in terms of the timing of the bye week. This is a bye week for health purposes, to try to clean up a lot of stuff. Lloyd, I mean, you can't ask for a better time than a bye. It lines up very nicely for the Utes to have a week off before they head to the Coliseum, a place they haven't won in a long time, and to take on USC. And by the way, USC just got boat raced in the Coliseum by Oregon State. They just dump trucks.
Oregon.
No. This is Corvallis. This is the Beavers.
Well, luckily, this was at Corvallis, right? This was at Oregon State.
No, this was in the Coliseum.
Oh. Yeesh. I think I saw the worst. Yeah, did you maybe just mention this? The worst loss since 1957. The worst loss.
I think so, yeah.
At the Coliseum, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, 2 aspects I want to point out before we jump on, because this was still a Utah win.
Yeah.
They got the win 24-13. And there are 2 things that we do need to recognize. Number one, Utah got themselves back on the sack train, 8 sacks in this game. Van Fillinger had 3 sacks. You had Kareem Reed, who had a sack. Devin Lloyd had a sack. You had Mika Tafua, Aliki Viamai, and Junior Tafuna, all with a sack. So 8 sacks against Washington State. And then you also need to look at the 3 interceptions. You got a pick 6 by Clark Phillips. You've got an interception by Kareem Reed for a 13-yard return. And then
he had a game, by the way.
He did. And then Devin Lloyd had a fantastic tip-to-himself interception as he read that flat throw. And just great film recognition. He knew that thing was going to be thrown out to the flat. He took the perfect step into the window and tipped that ball back to himself. So, you know, in a game, guys, that we watched in that rivalry game, not one sack, not one turnover.
Yeah.
In this game, 8 sacks, 3 interceptions, and it needs to be noted that the defense played their butts off in this game.
I'm curious to know.
It was 8. Go ahead.
I'm just saying, I'm curious to see what you see on film, Hans, when you take a closer look. I've just kind of breezed through it really quickly, and I'll take a closer look at it before we're on the air on Monday. But coming in for Nephi Sewell as a freshman, I thought Reed played his butt off. I thought he looked really good out there.
He did. And that guy, Lloyd, did you know much about this guy before you saw him today?
No, I did, but he was amazing. Like, he was flying all over the ball, led the team in tackles, and then had that pick. But as you said, I'll look real quick, I know this has been extremely negative on the Utes, but because, I mean, that was probably the roughest half of football I've ever seen. I think any of us have seen, but they won the game, and they're 1-0 in conference play, which is right where they want to be. So, and if I'm that offense, I take that entire defensive team out to lunch because those guys were dogs today.
Yeah, they were for sure. All right, let's shift gears. Let's talk BYU. Hans, it just felt like you just wrapped up the post game show. You just pretty much did wrap up the post game show. As BYU up 21-0 right out of the gate, and you're thinking, oh, this one's going to be ugly. This is going to be. I was thinking about telling you and Hatch to start the post game show the middle of the second quarter because there's no reason sticking around talking about this. And then all of a sudden, South Florida catches fire. They got a quarterback who BYU can't tackle. He keeps plays alive. He throws the ball well down the field. Their running game gets going. And when it's all said and done, this ends up being a one possession game. Now BYU gets the victory, but grumpy dudes on that BYU team after letting this team get as close as they did. And BYU comes out of the game a little banged up, too.
Yeah, there was more doom and gloom than I would have expected coming out of a game like that. And getting a win and having a 28-6 lead in the first half. And there were a lot of BYU fans that were upset about the defensive effort. And a lot of BYU fans that felt like this was a moral loss. And it was not the right feeling to have after starting your season 4-0. By getting wins against 3 Pac-12 teams and this South Florida team. But the first half, I think, was more indicative of the talent and coaching separation than that second half really showed. So a couple things that everybody needs to take into account. Here's who you were missing on the defensive side going into this game. Tyler Batty, Nasa Mahe, Keenan Ellis, Keenan Peely, and Isaiah Heron. Those are 5 starters, and those 5 starters between Tyler Batty and Keenan Peely, those 2 are fantastic in stopping zone read, which is exactly what South Florida hit you with in the second half of that game. And you were asking guys who are used to playing safety or guys that are young and coming off the bench, you're asking those guys to read and react in zone read and try to stop that quarterback and force him back inside. I did see some missed assignments, and that quarterback did get on the edge way too many times. And that South Florida team did get momentum and get working way too often, especially in the second half. But you're without 5 starters before that game even starts. And then you see Gabe Summers goes out for a bit with a twisted ankle. He's a tough kid, and he came back in. You saw Haas go down with an injury and missed some time in that game. And the defense just felt depleted. and they tried to fight and they tried to get back into it, but they were depleted. And guys, I'm just not worried about it. Yeah, you know, I don't know if you guys have been a part of a 21-0 quarter. I've been a part of one or two of those, and sometimes they put you to sleep, and you start looking at the scoreboard, and you're like, oh, I just hope we burn clock, and I just hope that we can just get this game over as fast as we can. And in your mind, you're just thinking, it changes. It's not like going against Arizona State where every play is life and death. Now it's 21-0 and this is a garbage team and we just whipped them for a quarter and I want the game over.
Yeah.
It changes your mind. It changes the way you're reacting in every single play.
I didn't think, like, the thing is, okay, sure, it got close. It got within a score. But the thing is, BYU could score if they wanted to if they were engaged on every, that defense couldn't stop. No. It really couldn't. They were able to move the ball. I mean, Baylor Romney was like 20 of 25 or 26 or something like that, like 300 plus yards and three touchdowns. I mean, like, the guy was like, that's unstoppable.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't seem like that. The only thing is what we talked about is that if the people back east, what they're going to think when they wake up and look and open up the thing, it's like, wow, that was a one score game. What are they going to think?
Yeah. Scotty, what do you think?
I think that's, I don't know. I think there'll be a little bit of concern there.
We wanted style points.
Yeah, you needed style points if you're BYU. But I think everybody also knows that you have a clunker here and there. I don't think I'm not too overly. I'm with you, Hans. I'm not too overly concerned about it in the grand scheme of things. You still got the W. Hopefully, if you're a voter, people do a little digging and realize that you had control of that game. At no point did I ever feel like BYU was ever in danger of losing that game because
as Lloyd
mentioned, I mean, every time BYU, the problem was BYU's defense just couldn't get off the field. I mean, that was a 9-minute, 19-play drive that cut it to a one-possession game. But you knew, and South Florida did the right thing by going for the onside kick because they knew their defense wasn't going to be able to get a stop. They didn't have any timeouts left. BYU couldn't be stopped all game. They were going to march down the field and kill the clock. So it was a smart move to go for the onside kick. And as soon as BYU recovered that, it's like, okay. There's no way. And sure enough, BYU gets the first downs, runs out the clock, and the game's over. So it just, you know, I'm with Lloyd on this one. Hans, I'm with you as well. It just, you know, I know the game is a little closer than it should have been, but I don't think any less of BYU after a game like that. And I don't think any BYU fan should think any less about their team after a game like that.
No. And I'm going to give you guys each one guess to who Baylor Romney's leading receiver was.
Well, I think I predicted him to be the leading receiver.
You're not going to believe this, but it was Gunnar Romney. I promise you, Puka and Samson and Neil Powell were in the huddle. Like,
oh man! Hey,
so, do you see us? Like, we're open, or you don't see that?
What was the phone call?
He barely got Puka.
And what was the phone call with his mom this morning? So, are you going to throw the ball to your brother today? Are you gonna throw it to Gunner? Because you probably should if you could. Mom, you probably, if you can throw it to him, you should throw it to him. And yeah, he did.
Blood is thicker than water, you know.
Yeah. It was cool to see those guys connect, and it was nice to have the camera pan to the family every time a Romney was mentioned. It's like, oh, there's the family. It's like, all right, we see them. Yep. Awesome.
That's them.
It is a cool story, though. The Romney brothers doing their thing. Baylor Romney, like Lloyd said, 305 yards. Gunnar Romney, 5 catches, 120 yards and a touchdown. And they did carry things offensively. I know that a lot of people are going to be looking at the rushing and say, well, only 143 yards. South Florida held BYU rushing under their defensive season average. What? Well, Aaron Roderick, I think, knows that there were certain style points that needed to be put on the board. And they only had three offensive possessions in the second half of this game, yeah, guys.
They had eight total for the game. That's only eight possessions. Which is crazy. That's nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's absolutely crazy. So there just weren't a lot of snaps to go around. And I do think that Aaron Roderick knows that there needs to be some style points. So he was having Beto Romney throw it around a little bit. And I don't hate him for it. You know, put it in the air. That is what BYU offense is. And if you come out of this game and Baylor had 12 attempts for 120 yards, but Tyler Allgeier had 24 carries for 125 yards, you'd look at it and be like, man, that was just boring, man. Why can't they ever put their foot on the throat of a team and just be aggressive and go after this? Well, that's what Roderick's doing. You know, you could give it to Allgeier, and to Lloyd's point, you could have rushed for an extra 100 yards, but you put it in Baylor Romney's hands and let him throw it around a little bit. I don't hate him for it.
No, no, not at all.
I'm not going to lie, though. Is it just me, or does Baylor Romney throw a better deep ball than Jaren Hall?
Yeah, he had a couple of really nice deep balls.
He's pretty accurate, and I get it. South Florida's like not putting a ton of pressure on you and stuff, but like I was really impressed with his accuracy.
There was one pass to the inside shoulder in the end zone. It ended up as a pass interference. The corner got a little bit too much jersey, and I can't remember who it was. If it was Neil Powell, but he kind of pushed off and got a little separation, and as he's falling backwards, that pass from probably 32, 35 yards hit him right square in the numbers, and he dropped it. But it was a pass interference, and I think it brought him up to like the 10 or something. But yeah, he had some really nice accuracy on those deep balls, especially when he was throwing them to his brother.
Dude was looking like Scott Bakula out there throwing to the little dummy.
I thought you were going to say Scott Baio because he's Charles in charge.
Nope. I'm going Scott Bakula.
Don't throw it to Stone Hands.
Oh, my gosh. I thought you were saying Scott Baio.
No.
Scott Baio ever played in a football movie? I'm surprised he didn't. Did Scott Baio do anything outside of Happy Days and Charles in Charge? I don't think so.
Other than look like a Daniel Russo lookalike? No. Doesn't he look a lot like Daniel Russo?
I can see that, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
He could have played Karate Kid just as easy.
You shut your mouth. No, well, he couldn't have.
Yeah, I'm not going to take that.
No, that's unnecessary.
We're not going to have any of that.
Come on. That's not okay.
Get out of here.
Okay.
Knock that stuff off.
But there were a lot of things to be positive about with this BYU South Florida game. I felt like people were a little bit too negative Nelly over the whole thing. And if you just take a look at some of the defenders that were out in this game, I expect to see Tyler Batty, Nasir Mahe, Keenan Ellis, and Isaiah Heron back on a football field at some point. I think that three of those guys should be back this coming Friday for that Utah State game. There was another injury, and guys, I would say that this would be the most impactful injury that BYU's had to this point, if it holds into next weekend, and that is Harris LeChance at the tackle spot. He was rolled up on. Mason Wake dove for a touchdown, and as he dove right into the back of Harris LeChance's legs. And I actually tweeted out a video of it because I was like, oh, it's painful looking. And it turned out that I tweeted out the video because I saw him play the next couple of snaps, but then he was on the sideline with ice and crutches, and I thought, oh no, that, my friends, is a guy that BYU cannot play without. They don't have another tackle in the rotation that can be as sure as Harris LeChance is, not even by a close margin. So you've got to find a way to get Harris LeChance back on that field, because Scotty, you know that Blake Anderson and that Utah State edge attack, they're going to, if Harris isn't on the field, they're going to key in on that.
Oh yeah.
They'll put their best rushers out there, and they're going to try to get themselves after Beta Romney or Jaron Hall, whichever it is that takes the snaps, because they just don't, they don't have a guy that can play like Harris.
Well, speaking of Utah State, BYU and Utah State coming up this Friday, and Utah State loses 27-3 to Boise State. But Hans, let me go through these possessions here for Utah State. So Utah State, their first possession of the game, they get down to the Boise State 47 and throw an interception. Next offensive possession, they get down to the Boise State 35-yard line. They go for it on 4th-and-3. They're unable to convert. Next offensive possession, they get down to the Boise State 24-yard line and miss a field goal. Next possession, they get to the Boise State 17-yard line and throw an interception. And then a couple of punts after that. Then they get down to the Boise State 18-yard line and then miss a field goal. It's actually blocked. The first field goal was blocked. This one was just a miss. And then finally they get later in the third quarter, they finally get to the Boise State 3-yard line and have to kick a field goal.
Oh, man.
So there you go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 trips inside the 50-yard line, 3 trips inside the 20, and you're only able to come up with 3 points. Utah State with about 30 yards more total offense than Boise State in this game, and you still lose by 24 points.
Tyler ran hard, dude.
Yeah.
I'm watching him play. That guy is a stud.
And I got to think this leads into what BYU, I think, you know, there's a blueprint here, the Boise State. They kind of conceded the run a little bit to Utah State. And they bracketed Devin Tompkins, who had 4 catches for 60 yards, but all of that came in the first quarter. They rolled the safety over the top on him. And they said, look, we'll let you go 20-20. And then when you get in the red zone, we're putting the clamps down, and that worked. I mean, Utah State could not get points deep inside Boise State territory. And I'm sure BYU is going to take a page out of that book.
I want you to clear a couple things up for me because I was getting ready to jump on air. I jumped on air at 10:30 yesterday morning for the Utah pregame show. So I was trying to watch and but kind of back and forth, and when I looked, glanced over to the TV as I was throwing the headsets on, Andrew Peasley was out there taking snaps. Why was Peasley on the field taking snaps?
Well, I think talk to coach afterwards. So Bonner played the majority of the game until they got Peasley a couple series in the second quarter, trying to do something to spark something on the offensive side. I'm not sure if that was something that they had arranged or if it was something they just wanted. I think it was just, look, they, you know, as he's mentioned us several times, they want to keep him involved in the offense. So I think they've kind of carved out a few series for him to get some time out there. And he really couldn't generate anything offensively. And then he got a few more possessions in the second half as well. I think Bonner's a little, and this is, by the way, this is just me speculating, I think Bonner might be a little bit more banged up than we'd like to see him at this point. If you're a Utah State fan, and Peasley came in to try to help out and maybe get a little spark, but with the defense they were up against, Logan Bonner's was probably your best bet, and he was just a little inaccurate. The timing was off. I don't know if there's the injury, overthrew a receiver that went off his hands, and that led to the first interception. A really bad decision inside the red zone on the second interception. The timing just wasn't clicking, and that was, I think that's the frustrating thing, is that Utah State didn't get out-physicaled. There wasn't a huge talent discrepancy. It was just Utah State just shot themselves in the foot time and time again in that game. And yeah, you can do that against Air Force. You can do that against North Dakota. And, you know, you can do that to a certain extent against Washington State. Boise State's just too good. And if you give them opportunities, they'll take advantage of it.
And then the other issue I had, when did –
I know where you're going, man, here. You thinking Johnny Linehan?
When did Johnny Linehan start playing for Utah State?
Oh, that's the one I look at and I think to myself, oh, no, that's not good. Don't do that. Because they weren't that far out of like,
no,
they
it. No,
it was that far. Remind me, what was the score?
It was 10, it was 10-0. And Utah State was at their own 18-yard line. And it was 4th and 10. And they run the fake punt. And the punter gets just blown up. And Boise State turns it into
that.
A quick touchdown. And at that point, it's 17-0. And coach afterwards said, yeah, that was me. My call. I did it. That was on me. I've had opportunities like that where it's worked in the past and felt like we needed to get a little bit of a spark. And it did not work, as we saw.
Not on 4th and 10, man.
Oh, yeah, man. On your own 18. There was another one that I thought he was going to try to run.
It was the very next punt, too. Yeah. And I don't know what the situation there was, but he got it away at the last second. Actually, it was, I think, his best punt of the day, too.
Yeah. Red zone issues are something that they need to focus on a little bit, but I'm not dumb. I would be watching this game film very closely, and I would not take that red zone effort and output and think, oh, yeah, this is typical. Oh, yeah, this is going to happen against us. Oh, yeah, well, we can control it just like Boise State can control it. I would not sleep on that for 5 seconds because I think they're going to clean up some of those red zone issues. They're going to hit those field goals. They're not going to have any missed field goals. And at the very least, they're going to find the end zone one or two more times out of those. What did you say it was? 6 red zone trips?
Well, total of 4 red zone trips, 1 field goal out of those 4, and 6 trips inside the 50. And total, and only 3 points to show for it.
Yeah, I'm not.
I can say this without a doubt. There is no way they will ever go for a fake punt like that on 4th and 10 deep in their own territory again. I can say that for sure. That will not happen again. That will not happen against BYU. I guarantee it.
Oh man, this is going to be a fun game though. I think it's going to be a really good game. And I can't wait to watch it. So you got BYU and Utah State coming up this weekend. And Utah, as Scotty mentioned, it's a much-needed break. And it was so funny in the post-game press conference, Kai Whittingham was asked about it. And he went on for like 3 minutes, 4 minutes about how perfectly timed this is. And he knows that this is timed well. He's dealing with injuries himself. You know, JT Broughton.
They lost three safeties, right,
Han? Yeah, they did. And Nephi Sewell didn't go in this game. And, you know, you're missing a good group of guys in that game against Washington State. So this is a good time for them to try to heal and recover, get some of the defenders back. It's just weird. Every year I know we deal with these injury situations, but BYU and Utah are very high right now. How about Utah State? Or did they stay healthy through this Boise State game?
A little bit. They had, it was funny. They had a guy named Chandler Dolphin had been starting at center. He had to miss last week's game. And they brought in his backup, who actually performed really well against Air Force. So he started this next game. He left the field and they had his shoulder pads off. And it looked like a little bit of an arm injury. They're a little banged up. And so not as bad as after the Air Force game, but there were a few players that had to be taken off the field, and I'm not exactly sure the extent of it. The big issue, and this was from the Air Force game, their best defensive back, Dominique Tatum, is out for, coach mentioned, for an extended amount of period, and frankly probably out for the season. So that's a big blow, and I think you saw his absence being felt against Boise State too. I thought overall Utah State's defense, I mean, with the short fields and a lot of the issues that the offense put that defense in, actually did not play poorly. I mean, 2 of their touchdowns were on short fields because of either turnovers or the fake punt and stuff like that. So I actually felt like the defense, I know it was 27-3, but they actually played pretty well. And I think it'll be an interesting task to see what they do up against that BYU offense.
Yeah, I'd agree with that on the defense. I thought they did play really well. in that game against Boise.
Well,
man, those empty red zone possessions, such a pain in the butt, buddy.
Yep.
Well, boys, enjoy the Sunday gift of in the NFL and enjoy the Ryder Cup. And we will have plenty to talk about come Monday morning.
Hands? Yeah, I think Scotty's Broncos are about to rough up.
Oh, you kidding me?
Zach Wilson.
Wilson's going to go for like 350 and four touchdowns against that defense.
Okay. Really? He might. I don't know if he's going to make it to this game. I'm serious. I'm worried about the guy.
Oh, man. Yeah, Von Miller might have a few things to say to him.
Guys, keep your fingers crossed for my Browns. Oh, pretty tough Bears team.
Get out of here.
I'm just impressed you know who the Browns are playing today.
Well, Odell Beckham Jr. is back in my lineup. So,
who do the Raiders have?
My lineup. That's the Dolphins.
Oh, that's a Dolphins team without Tua. Yeah, that would have been a win with or without Tua.
Yeah, that's a game they could mess up.
Hey, Hans, I'm doing a salmon on the smoker today. What do you? You got anything? You got big plans?
Actually, yeah, we're doing the sweet pulled pork street tacos.
Oh man, nice!
So I've got a pork butt on the Traeger as we speak. It is slowly smoking to a perfect tenderness, and then I do those corn tortillas with a little bit of cheese in between. So I make a little quesadilla, and then a little bit of that pork, a little bit of coleslaw, a little bit of a creamy chipotle,
Little ketchup on top.
Oh. No ketchup.
Okay. Yeah, I know you. I know you.
No, not okay.
Don't start this again. And then a little bit of the onion cilantro mix.
Cilantro.
That right out of Lloyd's Garden.
Right out of the garden.
Perfect. That is the perfect street taco.
Lloyd, you got any plans today?
Yeah, you know what? Actually going to be doing up some steaks. Got some family coming over for Jessica's birthday, so just having some family together.
Happy birthday, Jessica.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, I remembered it this time. Her birthday's on Monday, so we're just having some family together. Smart remembered man. It, so win for me.
All right, good for you. All right, gentlemen, let's do it again tomorrow. 10 a.m. start time for the show. We'll break it all down for you, but this is your morning after podcast. We do it every Sunday morning during the college football season right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone.